You're listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded in studio and live at Advertising Week's global events, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technologies industries each and every week. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and maybe even leave a positive review. Thanks for listening. On this episode of AW360, we speak with Paul Brenner, SVP of Global Retail Media and Partnerships at Vibonomics, and Dan Height, Vice President of Advertising and Media Partnerships at Placer AI. Paul and Dan discuss the state of retail media, including the pressing need for standardization and continued concerns around combating waste, as well as providing their perspectives on in-store advertising fitting into broader omnichannel strategies for brands. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Paul and Dan, welcome to the AW360 podcast. I'm so pleased to have you both on today. And as I understand it, you're no strangers to one another, but this is the first time we've all been together on a podcast. So if you don't mind, I'm going to have you both introduce yourselves to me and the listening audience one at a time. Paul, let's start with you.
Yeah, not new to Dan and I. We met in a bar in Vegas a few years ago. We do a lot together because I think, Vibonomics made a decision a couple of years ago to switch to a location-based foot traffic company that was leading the market, innovation, scale. And so, yeah, Dan and I have done a lot of things together because we both have committed, the two companies have committed to each other to try and push things forward in the space. So, my job, Vibonomics, is really known for in-store audio. We're doing more screens than we have before. And I lean more into the retail media network relationships. So most of the time, if you look at, retailer name, insert their retail media network affiliate, those are my relationships, agreements, and daily remit to help them drive revenue from in-store digital.
And Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself and Placer AI.
Yeah, well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, Paul. So, as we know. So I'm Dan Hyde. I run our advertising and partnerships team here at Placer AI. And we provide location analytics and market intelligence for everything from commercial real estate to retailers for things like site selection. And as Paul mentioned, we're now working with Vibonomics and a number of other RMNs in terms of providing intelligence about the number of people going to locations and something about who those people actually are in a privacy safe way. So excited to be talking more about retail media and kind of the in-store environment, because that's where most of the retailers we work with, and obviously the ones that Paul are talking about, is all about maximizing the opportunity on the in-store ecosystem.
Well, once upon a time with Advertising Week, we didn't talk about retail media whatsoever. That's something that, there's been a rise of interest in retail media networks over the past many years. And along with that, obviously a lot of challenges, but also a lot of opportunities. Paul, starting with you, what sorts of challenges are there to overcome in 2024 and looking into 2025 with retail media?
Yeah, we're 6 years in now. If you look at kind of the beginning of Dunnhumby and Kroger and right Walmart and kind of the Amazon, the starters out of the block, and we've seen massive uptake over the last 3 years, right? A new retail media network every week, right? U.S., global, and now they've established themselves as a 50 billion plus U.S. market. And with that growth comes new expectations, an area of the business I can't really talk much to is just the growth of e-com in those spaces and how they have to, the retail media networks need to adapt, act more like an agency, provide better measurement, provide better tools for the brands, deal with that side. Where I've really leaned in the last 2.5-3 years is being a vocal person around the in-store, being a majority of the spending, 90% of the spending, the foot traffic, how to get retail media to add that as a third leg on the stool. And so I think 2024 has been really an awakening of that in-store need, right? Acknowledgement by the retailers, a loud voice by the brands. Hey, wait a minute. A lot of money is being spent in the place where I'm not making all my investments. And so I think that's been 2024 has been the awakening. I think 2025 is going to see a lot of growth. We just announced our partnership with CVS Media Exchange yesterday, whatever date this airs. It would be, you know, probably around the 12th of November. And there'll be more. There'll be more of those. There'll be more screens. And so I think 2025 is just the reality has set in, and now it's time to move in that direction more aggressively.
Dan, your thoughts?
I echo some of what Paul's saying. I think a big part of it is, you know, is as the media investment has come in, now there's more scrutiny in terms of what am I getting? What is true incrementality on that, around that, particularly around an e-commerce side? And to Paul's point, where the majority of the dollars are coming from in terms of the in-store, that's been a part that's been largely ignored. It's been kind of the red-headed stepchild. And now that's becoming an awakening because a lot of these retail media networks have maximized kind of the online experience. And now they're doing more offline stuff and kind of that audience extension online. And now it's really about how do I take advantage of our, you know, depending on what retailer you're talking about, somewhere between 85 and, as Paul mentioned, 90% of the sales are actually coming from their physical stores. How do I take advantage of this multi-trillion dollar, you know, real estate investment that I have where shoppers actually are spending their time? And if you look at it pound for pound of the number of visits, the number of visitors going to, say, a Walmart or a Kroger or an Albertsons or a CVS that Paul just mentioned, you know, that's dwarfed by how much time they actually spend on their digital assets. So while the convenience is certainly there and obviously the friction from an e-com perspective was easier to solve. Obviously, when you're putting in infrastructure into the physical stores that, you know, Paul knows all too well with both Vibonomics and the parent company, Move Media, putting in digital infrastructure into these things, there's a capital cost to that. But the notion of the amount of spend going into retail media, it's really a question of how do we now maximize the opportunity without disrupting the consumer experience.
I just want to add one thing for that because he triggered a thought for me, you know, incrementality, right?
I triggered you? Well, shocker.
It all goes back to that bar in Vegas, Dan. No, you know, you think of, you know, the on-site growth, the revenue increases comes from fill rates and higher CPMs, right? And then so at some point you've got to look at the return on ad spend for that. And when the numerator stops growing because commerce media isn't where the sales are happening, that's a big reason to pivot towards in-store, right? Is like, here's your investment as a denominator, here's your return on revenue growth, and 90% of it's in the store. You've got to bring those together at some point to make your numerator bigger, right? And so incrementality is one piece. I think attributing total sales, I think, is another piece of that.
One of the themes at every advertising week, but one that has been very prominent the past year or two, is the subject of waste. And I think, you know, when we're talking about these massive budgets, and particularly something that is still, you know, retail media is mature, but it's still new in the whole scheme of things. There's a lot of concern about, you know, am I getting my ROI? One of the things that I've heard a little bit about, and I'm hoping you guys can, you know, share your thoughts on, is the idea of standardization amongst the retail media players. When are we going to see some better standardization? Where are we in terms of standardization, and how important is that to retailers?
And this is a topic that Dan and I do talk about. I mean, it's one of those things where I think IAB has a lot of good qualities, that they're a great organization. You know, measurement standards across diverse organizations, diverse membership, is very challenging to create and to enforce. And that's just reality. It relies on, you know, the willingness of all those participants to make it happen, right? So I think outside of the IAB is where Dan and I, you know, we might go from retailer to retailer. And I think the easier one is just like clean room standards, right? Data monetization. when it comes to e-com. It relies on existing standards. When you look at in-store, if I have 10 retail media networks I work with, I have 10 different viewpoints on what's a standard impression, right? And that's a lot of the work, you know, when Dan and I put out a white paper, God, what has that been, 6 months ago now, Dan?
June.
Yeah, and it was just a recommended methodology, and, you know, and it created some like, well, wait a minute, you know, what does that mean? Now you don't take my data anymore, the kind of behind the scenes conversation. So I think, you know, what I've always said is, you know, I think at some point the retail media networks have to come together on their own, you know, and talk about what that means to be a standardized impression, because without the standardized impression, you really can't talk about how to bring in store into the overall omni-channel or multi-channel measurement discussion, right? It's like the Maslow's, you know, what needs, right? Layer one is impressions, you know, and I think that's something that's not solved, Richard. I mean, I'll be honest with you, it's just not solved for, and I really hope that the retail media networks could take an approach like I was in terrestrial media for a long time in the 90s, you know, and watching, you know, the leaders in the terrestrial space come together and make Arbitron, right, and create that third party. So I just kind of, that's my position, is I can't really define it. IAB can't really define it. We can give guidelines, we can give recommendations, but at the end of the day, the RMN has to take the lead.
You kind of gave a perfect segue there in terms of omnichannel. How do you see in-store advertising fitting into broader omnichannel strategies for brands?
Well, I think it's this aspect of, you know, the utopia was always that, you know, Paul was shown an ad, Paul did this, Paul did that, Paul went into a store, Paul made a purchase, right? That's what the utopia for a brand and a marketer was. Fact of the matter is that world has never come together, and that's rife with a lot of privacy concerns. Retailers, because they have their own first party data, they have a one-to-one relationship with their brands, particularly in an online environment, but, you know, they don't want to necessarily abuse that when it comes to the in-store experience. And some retailers are better with some of the loyalty card information that they have. So you have to also account for those that you don't necessarily see. And so it's this notion of how do you kind of balance that? So a lot of the conversations we've been having, not just from an RMM perspective, but broader marketing perspective, is moving more to a cohort-based solution. It's I'm getting an idea of the types of people I'm reaching, and am I looking at the total spend that I'm getting? It's one of the things that Paul mentioned, kind of total sales that you're getting out of that. So kind of the total marketing allocation that you have, and are you leading to an aggregation of total sales in, you know, increase? Because obviously where we've been going from, whether it's a GDPR perspective, a CCPA perspective, you know, moving to a US-based, you know, maybe privacy bill, maybe not, whatever that's going to look like, changes in operating systems, cookie deprecation, and whatever flavor you want to have, the notion of we're getting, privacy is getting more stringent, not less. And it's really about understanding, you know, am I actually influencing behaviors, not a behavior? Because that notion of, did I nudge one individual? Those days are fading. And I think it's more about, am I reaching people, and am I getting influence over actions, but not a person and an action? I think those days are becoming more challenged just overall.
Interesting. Paul, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think he's dead on. You know, a big challenge that we face, and a reason we really switched to Placer, was omnichannel, you know, was a one-to-one type of scenario, as Dan was mentioning. And, you know, here we leap into this brick and mortar, one to many, one to few, right? Thankfully, Placer has a really high sample rate for, you know, the audience. It's still an area where when you try to put, you know, mash the two together to come out with that omnichannel, it's, you know, it comes with challenges. To Dan's point, I mean, you may have a retail media with 90%+ take rate on loyalty, and you may have another one that's 40% take rate on loyalty, right? So here you have a sample of the shoppers in a brick and mortar with a sample of the right loyalty card data versus I have to log in order to place my order on the website, right? That science is really what I think there are people behind the scenes trying to deal with it. I will say that most I work with are really trying to take a multi-channel approach first, that omnichannel might be a bridge too far out of the gate. You know, we've done tests back with Microsoft that were on-site PLA and in-store. I'm working on stuff that is off-site and in-store, you know, or at store and in-store. I really have not seen anybody yet that is taking on the omnichannel because of the things I just mentioned, right? Is first of all, how do I make those two different kinds of data sets and shopper audience, you know, views align so the incrementality is believable and so that, you know, attributable sales is accurate. And so that's, I mean, I say more multi now because I think omni is the goal, but I just haven't seen people really look at it as, okay, here we are, PLA, sponsored listing, offsite, onsite, in-store screens, in-store audio, boom. Like that is not happening yet. That's that great goal, great goal, but not quite.
Let's shift over to the agency perspective just a little bit. You know, if I'm an agency, what are the friction points that I have to be aware of and be on the lookout for when buying in store on behalf of brands?
Well, I think a big part of it, and Paul can probably comment a little bit more on this, is the relationship that they have. You know, at the end of the day, the retailers already have a lot of the relationships with a lot of the brands directly. So it's what role is the agency playing in that? Is it more of a, we're going to look at this across all the different media networks that we're operating in, and there are going to be some that are large enough that they're going to kind of command that one-to-one relationship versus kind of the network approach. As Paul's mentioning, there's a new RMN almost every single week. So how do I couple those things together and make sure that I'm looking at this across a portfolio of different RMNs and increasingly commerce media, you know, opportunities around that, and kind of what role is that? Versus, I know I need to be in Walmart. I know I need to be in Kroger. I know I need to be in Albertsons. Kind of one of those must-haves for maybe the grocery, which might be different than if you're, you know, more of a tool set. So you really, okay, I really need to be in Lowe's and Home Depot. There's two. I can handle that myself. So it's really kind of that role of what role is the agency playing in that, and how much disintermediation is there between the brand and the retailer directly versus the agency and adding value in that versus we're getting in the way in many ways. I think those are some of the challenges that we see overall. I think everyone's trying to figure that out right now.
Paul?
Yeah, and I think the way you describe it, Dan, is kind of interesting because in a lot of places, the RMN thinks they are the agency, you know, and they might have, you know, now 12, 15 tactics that they are spreading that budget across, and they have category specific or product specific planning, right? That it kind of feels like an agency. So if you look at how the agency world is reacting to that, is there are certain agencies that I know of that are trying to become like a center of excellence for retail media. You know, if you look at the acquisition of Publicis for Epsilon, right, or CitrusAd, right, that's their foray into trying to be aligned more. I think, you know, like a WPP is probably a little more behind, right, in trying to hold the ground on being the agency of record for the big brands. So I think it's really fascinating to me to watch. You know, I made a joke with Jeffrey Bustos at IB one time. I said, if, you know, we just sat back and had a beer one day and watched all of these, you know, brick and mortar companies try to become an agency, a measurement firm, a platform company, and like, oh, this one company is going to morph onto that. We, you know, grab a beer, watch this happen, you know? And so it's, agency is a big part of that. And I still think there's a lot to be figured out on that one, Richard.
For my last question on these, I like to ask what I refer to as the crystal ball question. And, you know, bearing in mind that there's no prize if you win, but, you know, there's also no consequence if you're way off base. But looking ahead, and we'll do this in turn, Paul, we'll start with you. Looking ahead 3 to 5 years, let's say, what do you feel is the biggest growth opportunity that retail media networks will need to capitalize on in the coming years?
Oh, wow. If they want to have any shot at hitting the, you know, the revenue goals that the industry is predicting, right? Which, who knows, you know, I mean, if that holds true, you know, I just think you're going to see more and more agency leaders become part of retail media networks. I think you're going to see, you know, more, I would say, the top 10, the biggest 10 retail media networks will just start to distance themselves a bit, you know, because of the complexities of it. You know, this show is post-election, so I think, you know, the new administration is going to have, you know, places that allow for more aggregation and more innovation to, you know, be allowed to happen, right or wrong, good or bad. And so I think there's going to be a lot. I think the growth of the market was great, but I think for it to continue to go up where it wants to and take share from Amazon like they want to, you're going to see organizations really put a lot more resources into how they're going to get there. And I think that means the top 10 are going to start to distance themselves from the field.
Dan?
So I'd say two areas. We've kind of touched on it a lot today is the in-store experience. I think that is a chasm, and that's kind of one of the areas that, you know, RMN is going to dramatically grow into and catch up more to where Europe is, because Europe is way ahead of us in the US around that. And I think the second is non-endemic and doing it smartly. Again, you have an audience. You don't want to necessarily distract from what the experience of why they're in that store or on that site. But obviously, you have a captive audience and you have first party data to leverage. So I think getting non-endemic right and doing that, I think those yield two significant revenue opportunities. They take thought and they take, discernment in terms of how you want to do that right. And there's going to be a lot of trial and error over the next probably couple of years, but 3 to 5 years, I think it's non-endemic and in-store.
A bonus question to both of you. Favorite bar in Vegas in which to meet people from our industry?
Loaded question.
The Aria Lobby Lounge.
The Aria Lobby Lounge. I think we're going to both say that same answer.
Excellent. Well, Paul, Dan, it was a pleasure having you on the show today. Thanks so much for taking part.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including our flagship podcast, Great Minds. You can find those at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts.